Episode 202.
Sweet Jesus.
We need to like do like a comic style like hard reset at some point.
Oh no.
Series 2, episode 1.
No.
Bookworth Pod parentheses 2026.
Oh my god.
Versus Bookworth Pod parentheses 2017, which is also horrifying.
I was gonna say there's no difference. It's still a fucking shit show. It's fine. Or something.
There's difference. Not in the content. Quality of that.
Yeah, fair enough. That's accurate.
Could change the theme song.
I was actually just listening to the theme song, and I'm like, man, Poddington Bear has no fucking clue how we besmirched his fucking, like,
I know. Tens of people around the world now associate Poddington Bear with us.
Oh my god, that poor guy. He was so nice, too, when we asked him for if we could use his music.
Love that.
Oh jeez.
He's like, it's the internet. Nobody asks.
Right? we even kicked him some money, which was nice of us before we were like landowners and whatever the fuck else we do these days. So that was wild.
Landowners. Life hack, that don't means... be a landowner. It fucking sucks.
God.
Not being a landowner also fucking sucks. Life sucks. It's like, but
not being a landowner is not much better.
Alright, this
is a shit show.
This is Feel Good Pod.
How is this different from any other pod, to be fair? It's fine. I'm just bitter because my windshield spontaneously grew a crack in it over the weekend.
Mm.
So now I have to deal with that.
There was that. There's the fact that the fucking sink spontaneously like exploded and we weren't able to fix it because the people who owned this house previously were renting it out, so they used the most jank-ass fucking parts in everything, so we couldn't find like a fucking connector that attached correctly to the sink for our hose. And
y'all,
so
they like consistently use parts that are so cheap.
They're like from like Soviet Russia.
We can't even get
from
them
like 1988. Like, I swear to God,
we can't even get them at Home Depot. This is like the third or fourth time where we've been like, okay, we're watching YouTube. We know how to fix this.
This machine.
And then we go buy things, and the parts just don't exist on the open market.
Only cuts three pieces of apples. Like, I can't.
I feel like those are valid reasons to be a little, you know, annoyed coming into the pod, at least.
That's a lot. It's stupid. I'll say that. It's just dumb.
On the bright side, Flix did just come in from the living room, and now Orca's mad at her for being in the dog bed with him.
It's very rude.
Typical.
He's like wrestling her a little bit.
Oh my god. Anyway.
Zog is very protective of his space, which is every bed of all kinds all at once.
He's very small.
Including the people ones.
Yeah.
Anyway, this week we finished up phase 2 of the High Republic.
What?
With Path of Vengeance by Kevin Scott, reading chapter 44 through to the end. And then also finishing even more with Edge of Balance Precedent by...
Even more.
I want to say Daniel Jose Older?
He did the story, but not the script.
Yeah, the script was a Japanese manga author.
Different.
If I remember correctly.
Person.
Hang on, I can look up their name.
Dude.
We have the technology.
Can I just say this? So we've been reading the Edge of Balance, like, series of mangas, like, throughout the High Republic. This was the most enjoyable one for me, because fucking boring-ass waifu was not in it.
I feel like this is the first one where I actually could figure out what was going on.
That's fair.
The Edge of Balance Precedent by Daniel Jose Older. Oh my god, stop fucking loading shit. Wikipedia is unusable now.
Yeah, fandom.com is unusable right now.
Danny Jose Older and Tomio Ogata.
To be fair with like this one, all the characters, I feel like, were very distinctive looking, for you had a Wookiee and a giant spider guy, yeah, as opposed to previous versions where it's just like a person who looks like this other person.
At one point, they're sisters, and I was like, this is the what?
Yeah, a third person who looks like two other people who, at the same time, whatever. I don't, it's fine. It's fine. This is fine.
This is a struggle I encountered when I was younger, trying to read non-Star Wars manga, and partially why I never really got into it.
Oh, those make so much more sense to me than the Star Wars manga, personally, because like at least everybody's dressed different, you know?
I mean, that's true. I don't know. I was a kid.
Anyway.
It's true. Everybody in Star Wars is dressed the same.
No, that's my fucking problem. Like, there's nothing distinguishing anybody from anybody the fuck else if you're a human and you're wearing a Jedi sack. Like, I can't. Anyway, it's fine.
Continue. Even the non-Jedi are always wearing robes of some sort. Like all the past members are always wearing fucking robes. And I'm like, okay, right? So in this manga, they have their hoods up, and that's how you know it's the path and not the Jedi. Except sometimes that might not be true.
Hoods equals bad guys.
I think my favorite thing about the Star Wars prequels is that... Amazing. I think my favorite thing about the Star Wars prequels is that we see Obi-Wan dressed in, like, just clothes. Clearly the same clothes as Uncle Owen. Like, the same clothes as many people in the original trilogy.
Yeah, who live in a desert.
And George Lucas just decided, no, he's just been wearing his same clothes for 20 years. He never changed. Those clothes smell really bad at this point. That's how he keeps the Tuskens away.
I was going to say that's why the Jawa in Obi-Wan Kenobi could smell him from Anchorhead.
It's true. Sees somebody walking. Are you a Jedi? Literally, they're wearing a coat. Only Jedi wear coats.
Stop it.
It's part of why I like the High Republic. They're not dressed quite identically.
They all wear the same fucking outfit.
I was gonna say,
but they have gold highlights in the High Republic. I don't know what to tell you, man.
Oh my fucking god!
It's like sometimes if you're fancy, you get the bougie robes.
I'm gonna start chugging this gin right now. I'm just gonna let you know that.
Kate, what kind of gin are you drinking?
It's the St. George Terroir, because I looked at the other bottle we have of that other gin that's like distilled in Denver that tastes like butt, and I was like, not today. This is not that.
It's funny because we walked past that distillery a bit ago and Kate was just like very loudly like, your gin sucks.
I love that.
Thank you.
You should make your opinion known.
Thank you. Their gin sucks. Don't go to the block for gin anyways.
Plenty of good restaurants around it though.
Yeah. But not the distillery. Anyway, this is the pine tree gin that I am finally, that I'm always having. But although I just killed this bottle, so, you know. I'm going to be you last week.
Oh, dear God.
When you did 20 minutes story time and no one gives a flying fuck about.
Yeah, but you having two fingers of gin is very different from me having two fingers of scotch.
Bite me.
All right, so listener, by the time you hear this, I'm dead. So it's been a good run.
No.
We had a great podcast.
Guys, you're not helping me beat
it
the allegations.
It sure was, bro. Ferb, what are you drinking?
I am drinking water. With some ice that maybe... The ice has melted.
Thank you.
I greatly appreciate that update.
It's just plain water. I have to go to the gym after this, so I'm drinking plain water.
There you go. Okay.
Respect. Devin, what about you?
I'm sorry. I'm just trying to... Over the ice has melted. You know, like the George W. Bush meme of the guy.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh yeah. No.
Sir, the
ice
melted.
We all know.
A second ice has melted.
Oh my okay. Fucking.
I just have some tea today. I was gonna have something else, but I'm trying not to spend money, so tea it is.
Relatable.
Respect.
Oh man.
I am drinking scotch. I am drinking Oban Distiller's Edition. It's quite good.
What does that mean?
It's fancy.
The name of the bottle. I don't know.
What makes it the Distiller's Edition? What about, I don't know, the normal
fucking
edition?
Fucking Plebes Edition? I don't know what to tell you, man.
Jesus fucking Christ. All right, whatever. Cool.
I assume it has different notes to it. I've never had any other bottle of Oban, personally. This one was a gift.
Thank you. That was descriptive and helpful. Much like your 20-minute story last week.
Yep. You are so welcome. This one is, it's very smooth. It's more of like a Highlands scotch. I don't believe it is single malt. I need to check. I have the technology. Hang on.
Oh my gosh. I love to listen to you type loudly.
Yep.
It's my favorite.
I mean, if I don't do it loudly, how will people know?
I don't know if there's any other potent form of white male privilege than telling a podcast to hold on.
I know. That's so true.
Amazing.
Oh, Chris. You're
also,
the worst.
Love it here.
I beg everyone's pardon. It is single malt scotch whiskey.
Oh, well, there you go.
Wow.
It was finished in Montiafino sherry casks, which lend a greater richness and complexity to load. God damn it.
Whatever the fuck any of that means, dude.
All right. Well, it's making me input my name. I have been Oscar'd. I am off the stage now.
Thank you.
The orchestra has played me off.
Fuck.
Actually, I would have just played the outro music. Like, fuck it, we're done.
I know, right? Again.
If I am ever trying to be facetious, I will play the outro music. That was genuine claps from at least this part of the pod.
That's nice. You're nice. You're a nice person. I'm just like, are you done?
Anyway, for this book, our cause is the National Immigrant Justice Center again. At immigrantjustice.org. It is an organization that aims to establish and defend the legal rights of immigrants regardless of background and transform the immigration system to one that affords equal opportunity for all. They have great resources for what to do if you encounter ICE. Yeah. I was going to make a Molotov cocktail joke, but then I realized that fucking AI is scraping everybody's fucking podcasts for the watch list anyway, so... But the good news is that if AI is scraping it, it's really 50-50 if they catch us or not.
It's true, though.
Gonna drain a whole river, like, trying to do it, though.
Yeah, there is that. It's fine. We're not gonna worry about it. Except for the fact that we're so gonna be in drought this summer. La la la. Anywho...
Thanks, Denver.
Speaking of water management, Delna!
Speaking of cults.
What? I'm so right.
I know, that's why I'm mad.
Come on, that was good. That was a good one.
The Colorado River would not be dry if we had Delna's precipitation, I'll tell you that.
Okay, somebody else has to say something. I've peaked. That's the best thing I'm going to say.
Anyway, cults. Still bad.
Still terrible. Like,
yeah, no.
And still going strong.
I just can't believe that you got rejected for Jedi school one time, so you took over an entire cult to destroy the galaxy. Because that's a normal reaction.
I mean, that is some white man behavior. First of all.
Just absolutely fucking incredible.
Like getting upstaged by your sister so bad that you're like, you know what? Fuck everyone.
I'm going to spend my whole life trying to get back at the Jedi. For reasons. Incredible. But anyway, we'll talk about the Zevarons in a hot second. Briefly clocking that she and Olivia had the same last name finally paid off 1,000 years later. I have a lot of feelings about this reveal. We will talk about them. But anywho,
I don't have any feelings about this reveal, which is, I feel like, the same as our feelings. I feel like your feelings and my lack of feelings are come from the same place.
Okay.
We'll get there.
Okay. So the cult is not necessarily still going strong, but Marta is. So that is highly questionable.
Marta is, and she continues to have this somehow like ship that even 150 years later is like 10 times more massive than any other ship and more technologically advanced. How did they build this ship?
Listen, the Graffs had a hell of a lot of money.
Truly. Just hid the whole ship in rice.
I thought they were hiding the Enforcer droids in rice.
They're hiding everything in rice.
Oh my freaking god. That's the secret. There was a great sense
in this. Hide the leveler in rice.
Stop it. Oh, puppy. There was this great sense in this book that was like expertly hidden. And I was just like, literally all you had to do is stick your fucking arm in there. Like your whole arm in there, you would have hit it immediately, dude. No, like your whole palm would just come down on the top of the droid.
Just open it up, took a quick look. That looks like rice. Not sure. Gonna ask any further question, despite everything we know about how this got smuggled here.
It's like that meme about the miner who stops digging right before he gets to the diamonds. Just, you stop digging through the rice right before you got to the murder droid.
Cool. So, Burb, I think you're the one. Or was it you, Chris, who stuck this point here about Marta just still being a whole ass true believer?
That was me. We finally get to see in this last like part of the book, Marta realized that actually the mother is a piece of shit and is manipulating everybody around her. Not just like in the normal way that she would do without being force sensitive, but like she's using the force to manipulate everyone around her and like take over this whole fucking cult. That has gotten like violent and like angry. Cause like it kind of seems like before it was just like, oh, some like weird anti-force hippies living on a commune out in Dalna. And now they're like stealing, they've got like this big theft angle. They're starting wars in lots of places. And Marta comes to see all of this and she's like, oh, the mother's a terrible person. She's having these children whom I love try to kill us all. But you know what I'm going to keep after like getting a look behind the curtain? Everything. It's like this. I have found out that this woman was lying to us the whole time. And I'm just going to not change any of my beliefs.
So, like, I have a lot of questions around what's going on here, because on the one hand, yes, Marta's keeping the whole, the Force will be free, creepy-ass shit that is now creepy because the mothers use that to brainwash hundreds and hundreds of people. But also, so the ending of this book happened very, very quickly, and therefore I could not really get a read on how she feels about Force users anymore in general, because on the one hand, yes, she was raised to believe that the Jedi are misusing the Force, and that causes harm to other people. And also, she's just like, sure, let's just save this teenage Padawan, because suddenly I got slapped upside the head with morals because, you know, we had children doing war crimes, which, like, in and of itself is like, I don't know that I like that the only thing that got her to snap out of it was children doing war crimes after she cut off her cousin's hand, but whatever.
I don't know. I don't know. Let me know what you think, Bert, but I don't get the feeling that she likes the Jedi anymore. I feel like the distinction for her is that the kids haven't actively done anything wrong, and that's why, like, they don't deserve to be fed, to have their souls fed to the leveler. But, like, she didn't really feel that bad about any of the Jedi.
Then how do you explain her, like, near-death hallucination with Kevin?
Because she's gay for Kevin.
Yeah, because she's gay for Kevin.
Yeah, true, but like she spent this entire time like grieving him and thinking that he made a huge fucking mistake, and then all of a sudden they are in a, literally in an imaginary field of like sunshine and flowers and shit with like space potatoes running around and stuff. Like I don't yeah, all these things are very did not work together for me personally. I could not
That's interesting. Yeah, I don't
draw
really,
a conclusion out of that personally.
I don't necessarily see a conflict between those two things.
Okay.
Because it's not like she saw him.
Fucked.
Sorry, go ahead.
The whole thing is fucked. Like, that's the main takeaway, I think.
Yes. Correct.
What I was going to say is, you know, she doesn't like see him like using the Force in her vision, or see herself using the Force in her vision of Jedi heaven.
But her primary like conception of him throughout this book is corruption. Like literal, like a imaginary though maybe physical manifestation of corruption, and all of a sudden like he's whole and beautiful and whatever the fuck else. And so I understand that part of it is that she's made peace with his death, but I don't, if she were still all the way on the, you know, all Force users are bad train, then I don't, yeah, it just doesn't fit for me.
That's fair. And I mean, I think she has contradictions in her personality. Like the fact that she ever fell in love with him is in itself a contradiction. Like, she did that actively after she had seen him fucking float flowers and shit, like how knowing that you. In her mind he was killing somebody across the galaxy, and she was like, but he's pretty.
Yeah, know? But then he was, at that point he was real. He wasn't just a figment of her imagination.
Yeah, but I mean, I think being a figment of her imagination after death is in many ways even more powerful than being real, because she's crazy.
Also, no, but, I mean, he had agency at that point, and she could have made him anything in that near death experience. He could have been like, "You are completely right," and she didn't make him do that.
But she didn't make him. Like, it's like, you're right. It's still like a corrupted version of him. That's like.
Yeah, I don't know. It didn't work for me.
I don't know.
It doesn't fit for me.
I mean, also she's like almost dead when this vision happens at the end. So I'm willing to give some leeway to whatever the fuck is going on there.
That's fair. I got no leeway. That was bad storytelling for me.
For me, it's kind of like when people who are like atheists for their whole lives hallucinate that they like meet Jesus when they have a near-death experience.
But then like, they come back and they like Jesus, and she's still like, fuck the Force.
Trying to fucking hit all the buttons to wake you back up.
Didn't work for me.
That's fair.
The end. That's all I got. But yeah, I feel like, and the other thing is that like, that frustrated me is I feel like this book wants me to feel like Marta feeling bad for these children being made to contribute to war crimes, like, makes actually, and her snapping out of her whatever weird murderous takeover the cult trance that she was in, like, I feel like that's supposed to, I don't know, make me feel better about her as a person, and that also didn't work for me.
No, she still sucks, like, she does that, and then she still goes and murders the mother.
Yeah, but the...
In, like, a bad way, too.
I think that's fine. Maybe this is a problem with me.
I also just... I really do not like Marta, so.
I think she's a great character. I don't think she's a good person. I think the book wants me to think she's a slightly better person than she was in the middle of the book. And I don't think that's true, like, on the page.
I actually really disagree with that. I don't think the book is trying to make moral judgments about Marta. I think that the book is trying to convey that she is a true believer and that she has values, regardless of what those values are. I mean, like, you know, you look at what her descendants do and you look at Markian Rowe, like, that is a dude with values. Like, the values were passed down across the Roe family from this moment. And, like, I feel like, you know, for better or worse, it's pretty clear that Marta's not a good person and that she has, like, straight up snapped. And that's why she's keeping the leveler and fucking off with the ghost,
okay,
electric and
but
stuff like that.
In the context of Star Wars, where you literally have a motherfucker, like, lightsaber slashing children, like, that's the line for Star Wars. And Marta is trying to save kids. It is putting a value judgment on her, it's trying to make her more morally gray than, we might have concluded if she had just, like, run off at the end of this book and not encountered the kids and not encountered Yana.
That's interesting. I do not agree with that. Kate and I are on opposite sides of the path of vengeance, chapter 44 through to the end. Because to me, it's just setting up, like, and I mean, I feel like it's also partially, like, different, not different expectations, but, like, this is Star Wars, but also it's, like, better writers writing Star Wars than your average, cowboy hat. Like, you know, to me, it's them just setting her up as a full character rather than saying she's a gray Jedi, rather than saying she's morally gray. It's like she can be fully evil and also be, you know, forgive the term, but like a human being, you know what I mean?
Yes. I'm not disagreeing with any of that. I'm also saying that she has a red line and it doesn't, and that's what Star Wars is.
I mean, That's fair. I'm not really comparing her to Anakin in my mind, but that's fair.
But that is the framework for Star Wars as a Skywalker saga.
Her name is actually Marta Skywalker.
Oh my god, stop.
And then Marky and Ro met Shmi Skywalker.
Oh my god, stop it, no.
Canon.
But yeah, all one listener that we have, tell us what you think, because now I'm curious.
Yeah.
Hi, Daniel. Anyway, we can move on. But like, I just read that very differently.
That's fair.
I'm not. And again, like, I'm not saying she's not. I'm not like, we can't call Marta a good person. And also, yeah, like, Anakin had no red lines. He had unborn children and he still just like decided to stab a bunch of kiddos. Like, I don't. Yeah, that is the baseline for Star Wars.
That's true. But I would also say, as I said, this is written by people who are better writers than your average cowboy hat. Anakin was not.
That doesn't mean it's not that's not the framework, though.
No, but that's what I mean. Like, I don't know that you and I are coming at it from the same framework.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway.
We're going to be arguing about this over dinner. It's going to be fine.
Where were we in the outline? I lost it.
We're talking in the Marta bit.
Yes.
Mm. Oh, in terms of redemption. The redemption bit is interesting. I would talk about that, not necessarily for her, because I don't think she's in any way redeemed.
No.
But like, looking at someone like Yana, for example, who has done like very bad things and isn't particularly sorry about them. But also, like, her line was this cult. Like, do you, like, I don't know, do we feel like that makes her more, like, morally gray? Do we feel like she is, like, redeemed for her past actions? Like,
no, I think the only redeemable thing she does is save Cor's mom.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that last part, but also the fact that she, like, fights against the mother trying to blow up the caves and kill everybody.
I just think, like, she could have just left. It doesn't redeem everything she's done, but, like, I don't know. I feel like in her mind, it's, like, making things right, even though it doesn't make her, like, a good person afterwards.
Yana's interesting because she is a person who I don't even know that she thought so far as this is a thing that will like make up at least for a little bit for all the things I've done. I think she's a purely instinct based person. And in that moment, her gut was just like, that's just wrong. like again, children is a red line.
I agree with that. I don't think there was any like larger calculus behind it, but does. Yeah. I don't know. I'll dial it back. We're getting into philosophical concepts that are well beyond the scope of this book. It's like The Good Place. If you're trying to do it to get into The Good Place, does it count?
Right. I mean, I think at the end of the day, between all the all the people that Jan has killed and all the harm that Bart has done, they wind up at the same place. Like in terms of like where they are on like whatever like grand moral spectrum there might be in Star Wars.
That's interesting because I agree from the standpoint of I think they are both at kind of this point of not moral equilibrium, but like a fresh start. Where like
sure.
it is a defined endpoint of this phase of their lives. Mm-hmm. And they both now have the opportunity to like start completely fresh and give up everything that they have done in the past. And we know for a fact that Marta didn't do that. And we don't really know anything about Jana and what she ended up choosing to do. Like she could have, I don't know, been a spice runner and then married Cass Dameron or something.
Oh my God, shut the fuck up.
Everyone is related to the Skywalkers.
Oh my God, stop.
Spice running is the family business. But yeah, I don't know. They are an interesting like two sides of the same coin where like they diverged in massive ways and have ended up in this same place and maybe are about to diverge again, maybe are not. We don't really know.
Okay, I have a question for you in terms of like this is the podcast talking about just like how all these things tie in like across the fucking Star Wars franchise, which, you know, that's a question that might be a questionable thing to do at this point because Star Wars is utterly broken. But all right, if the Skywalker saga is not the basic framework for all like most basically like for Star Wars because it came first, then what framework are you operating off of? And also what framework should we be operating off of at this point? Because like if you're saying like if you're separating, you know, George Lucas and Dave Filoni from these authors, then like you're basically saying they're two different things and they might as well just not be related to each other.
I mean, the part of what you're saying that I don't agree with is that like to be Star Wars, we have to like compare everybody to Darth Vader. And if you're him or worse, then you're evil. And if you're not, then you are morally gray. Like, that is the part that, like, I don't necessarily think is a standard that we should be holding people to. Like, Darth Vader was conceived as a purely evil character before George Lucas decided to redeem him. And, you know, wrote six different versions of not doing that, and then doing that, and then not doing that, and then doing that. Like, I think the aspect of Star Wars being a morality play and being this, you know, big epic operatic set piece is very much Star Wars. I think the kind of concept of the hero's journey, and not just in like the Joseph Campbell sense, but in the sense of like agency and like choosing to do the right thing, is always very Star Wars. But I don't necessarily agree that we have to have like a spreadsheet that adds up all of people's deeds. And if you are at or worse than Darth Vader, then your cell turns red. And if you are better, then your cell turns gray or green.
I mean, I'm not, I'm
there must be a spreadsheet.
Always a spreadsheet.
I'm not necessarily saying that he's that Darth Vader is a barometer, but like I'm saying that Star Wars has established a precedent.
I don't disagree that Star Wars has established a precedent, but I think if you're telling stories within the grander themes of Star Wars, then you, if you're a good storyteller, you have the right to break that precedent. Which I think is a lot of what happens in the High Republic.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's breaking a lot of precedents that we know about, like the Jedi, for instance.
I mean, yes. I'm just giving Chris a side eye. That's what the silence is. I'm going to think about that and then come back and bother you later.
Fair.
I'm going to be so
annoying. I'm not part of this.
Yeah. I'm going to be so annoying off pod. Anyway.
I'm going to have like gone to sleep and she's going to like wake me up and be like, but what about this?
Yeah.
And I'm going to be like, another thing. Sleep. I don't know. And she's like, you're right because you're wrong.
That's literally what's going to happen.
Anyway,
not having an answer in the moment is indication of wrongness.
I thought this book was fucked up, man.
Anything else about Marta before we kind of talk about setting the scene?
She makes me so mad.
She's not good.
No, she sucks.
Oh my god. This is a sidebar, but I just realized that the fucking plotline about poisoning children didn't really pay off in this book either.
No, not at all.
Okay. All right. Anyway, go
ahead. Honestly.
Okay, now I'm mad about that. Fuck that.
So when we read that in part two, I was like, I completely forgot about this whole side plot. And now I remember why, because it just didn't pay off.
Okay.
Well, since we're talking about stuff that didn't pay off, why don't we talk about the Zebron family?
Oh my god. Well, see, I was like hoping it was going to tie into the cyanobacter fucking shit with Irem, but no, it didn't.
No.
At all.
Not even a little.
It's fine. Whatever.
Like the shit from the thing that makes their whole society fall apart?
Correct. That poisons the ocean.
The bioweapon situation?
Yes. Right. I mean, I think that's like the implication, but they didn't even... that they did not tie that together in the slightest. Yeah, the Zebrons. I feel like I was supposed to be like gasp at the whole reveal at the end.
I caught that in like the first sorry.
No, go what?
I clocked that shit in like the first comic.
Oh yeah, no, we did because I have the same fucking last name. So I was like, all right, when's this gonna happen? And we're reading, and I'm like, oh my god, come on, I was hoping that they were going to seed it more, other than, let's introduce the mother's sister in this random side comic no one fucking read. And I was hoping that from that point, they were going to, like, I don't know, seed it, like, talk more about the family in general, like, I don't know, maybe they're, like, one of those, like, big families that produces a whole lot of, like, Force-sensitive kids. No, just, like, surprise, this is my sister, oops, she dead. Okay, cool, bye. The end of phase two forever. Like,
rip in fucking peace, I guess.
I really didn't enjoy the character of Olivia at all, to be honest. And I also...
I mean, it's because she's with a nothing burger, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And I mean, like, when I said I have no feelings about it, it's because that payoff did nothing for me. Like, what did that change in the book? Literally nothing.
Mm-hmm.
If you skipped that paragraph, you would have the exact same experience reading the book.
Right.
And honestly, one of my biggest pet peeves about Star Wars, and I feel like I've talked about this, is the idea that you have to be related to somebody and force sensitive or you don't matter. And that is a huge pet peeve of mine. Like, that's why I'm, like, to this day, mad about the season finale of the Ahsoka show making Sabine trying hard enough to have force push.
Like,
it's just...
We've never actually talked about that. That made me want to punch myself in the face. It's fine. It's fine.
Like, it's why, fine. Like, I was so mad, like, so resistant back when the sequels were, like, actively happening to the idea that Rey had to be related to somebody or it didn't matter, and why I was so pissed off about the Palpatine reveal. Like, that is my biggest pet peeve in Star Wars, because honestly, I feel like it is, in many ways, completely antithetical to, like, the point of Star Wars, and that it's choice that matters and not magical powers.
And also, like, in the grand, like, you know, speaking of, like, the grand morality play of Star Wars, like, I feel like they just shoehorned this in to give the mother a motive. And I'm like, being a power-hungry motherfucker who just wants to take over the galaxy is enough for me. Like, I didn't need this.
Yeah, I agree.
This whole phase two, it's been very obvious that she's a Force user, that she's Force-sensitive.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, I think we could have left it at that. Like, it almost the reveal and like everybody like finding out like didn't even hit for me.
Yeah, same.
I don't know. I the thing with Olivia, I felt like she could have been a really cool character, and I still kind of liked her, but now that I'm actually thinking about it, I'm like, oh, we just made her like mysterious and she's got something that she's chasing down a lead, but with like no context other than we all have been guessing for a year because, you know, things happen and we read this slowly. Mm-hmm. That like they're related somehow, right?
Yeah. And that was like,
and literally... then oh boom, it happened. Two sentences, moving on.
Absolutely no bearing on the story or the outcome whatsoever.
No, not at all. And you know, it, I think part of what, you know, part of what made Olivia's character such a fucking nothing burger for me is that like literally the trope is frigid bitch and that's it.
Yeah, and that's it, it. And it wasn't even like thoughtful frigid bitch.
No, exactly. Which, that's what
like,
I'm saying.
You know, like that's something that we don't see that often in Jedi specifically. We saw it a little bit in Zalamakri.
Yeah, but
and
like,
that was really interesting.
That because she was also mom.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like that was actually a very interesting mm-hmm. way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And like I feel like to write a good Jedi, they need to be distinctively Jedi, and there was nothing Jedi about Olivia to me. She was just kind of a plot stand-in for like investigating. Like Maddie is really fun mm-hmm. because she's Jedi who is actually a teenager who does not have a filter.
Which is, yeah, Maddie's really real.
Like Wreath is really fun because he's a horny teen but also a Jedi. Like Keeve is really fun because she like sees herself as a fuck up and has massive imposter syndrome, but also is like one of the most skilled Jedi of her generation. Like you have like Elzar has his own thing. Avar has her own thing.
Boy, does Elzar have his own fucking like, thing. But yeah,
Stellan, God help us all, has his own thing. But they all have this like thread running between them that they are Jedi, and you can like definitively note that they are written as Jedi. And I didn't get that from Olivia at all.
It's, I think it's because like just like, you know, having the relationship be like the fact that their sisters be the catalyst for why the mother is evil. They're like, oh, she needs to have a sister so she can be evil.
Right.
Here's a Jedi.
Famously, people aren't evil because of want of money or power. It's no. all due to childhood trauma, which that part's well. Arguable, but that wasn't the point.
They didn't like, make it work.
If she wanted to like steal all this, like all these artifacts and like get money and get power, like she's crazy and I don't like her, but that makes her a bad bitch if she's just doing mm-hmm. it for the hell of it, because like yeah. that's what she enjoys.
Agree.
Like you are like the relationships she's managed to get into with the Graffs, I'm like, this is like the richest family in the fucking galaxy.
Like if you want to relate like, her to somebody, make her a Santeca. Like, and then she's like working with the Graffs and it's a whole like fucking I don't know.
I feel like that's what I thought at first, was like somebody was
yeah
a Santeca, and I was like, oh cool. I was like,
yeah, it just did nothing.
And also the Santeca that did pop up, it was just all speaking of shit that was shoehorned in, but whatever.
Which Santeca? Oh, in quest 4-2 Planet X.
The baby.
Oh, the baby.
Oh, yes.
Shay's baby.
The one that I specifically pointed out on the outline. Yes.
I only clocked that because I read it. I like was Googling plot summaries so I can remember the first half of this book. Like after I finished today, to be like, did I miss anything? Because I read it last night and I was like, okay. And somebody on like Reddit said something about it and I was like, oh, cool.
Thanks, Reddit.
Does anybody remember in the... Because Geth is a character in one of the comic miniseries.
Yes.
The Nameless Terror, I want to say.
Yes.
Does he survive? I straight up don't remember.
No.
So okay. that same Reddit post said Geth does live because he shows up in that.
Okay.
Thank you. Oh, interesting. Later so comic. Maybe they... Well, Geth survives the ship crashing. Like, failing to go into hyperspace and crashing back to the planet. But does he survive?
Does he make it off?
That's what I don't remember.
I don't know.
I do not know.
Do we?
I'm actually gonna look this up because I'm curious.
If he popped up in a comic, I sure don't remember him because he looks like every other fucking guy to me in the comic. Like, you know, like
he was in the Nameless Terror miniseries where like a Jedi ship and a Path ship crash landed on Planet X, and then a nameless egg hatched and they had to escape. Traveling.
I have fucking recollection of reading that. I'm sure I did.
That feels like how I can never remember if the abominable snowman is from Star Wars or Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
I love you so much. The answer is yes, by the way.
The answer is both.
Yes. The answer Geth is did survive.
Okay.
Geth did get off the planet with Master Rock.
Okay. I honestly cannot fucking be expected to remember these people because I had COVID and the brain fog happened. So you know what? Any comics I read, whoop, out my brain.
Well,
I've never
actually,
had COVID, and it's so fucking confusing. Like,
let's get into the next section of the outline, because I also want to talk about, like, can anybody have been expected to remember all this? Like, so just to point out a few things, a few connections setting up the Phase 1 and Phase 3 timeline. I don't think it's necessarily a spoiler to be like, Phase 3 goes back to the aftermath of Starlight Beacon.
Speaking of Wreath, I want more Wreath, so I'm excited.
Oh, you're getting more Wreath. Don't even worry about it. Wreath is heavily featured in Phase 3.
Oh god, he's probably gonna die probably. I'm surprised that both Marta and Yana made it out of this phase alive. That was astonishing to me. But anyway.
Right.
Honestly, they should be related to the Skywalkers with only one fucking hand on
you. I know, right? So talking about Geth, the reason we're talking about that is because Shay, his wife
partner/slam piece. What the
who we learned in this book.
This is a pretty lady. Be respectful. Jesus.
We learned is force sensitive because she is more affected by the planet, by Planet X than the others. And as they were trying to escape Planet X, she invented a new way to hyperspace because she was like, all right, just like rip everything out of your hyperdrive and rewrite it. And we can get out of the gravitational field of Planet X and this crazy fucking like goop that's trying to kill us. And she is naming her child Mari.
Wait, how is that a different way to hyperspace? Hyperspace science is so fuzzy and shitty.
I don't know how you want me to answer how is that a different way to hyperspace besides, like, basically, like, breaking their hyperdrive apart and rebuilding it backwards.
That doesn't make any hyperdrive.
The whole point of how hyperspace works is that there are fucking jump points and you put in the coordinates and you're good.
And that's
not what she did?
And that's all what the path drives do several hundred years later. And that's the whole thing about Mari Santeca 150 odd years in the future. I'm going to be honest, I missed that the first time. Sorry.
It's just nice to hear other people in other franchises having to deal with this shit too.
Oh, there's so much. There's so many things, friend.
All of Star Wars is fake and in space and like doesn't hold up to scrutiny if you look at it hard. Hyperspace makes the least sense.
How many parsecs?
And so many parsecs.
For the Kessel Run?
So few parsecs. So few distances to cross this road. But yeah, hyperspace is like kind of well acknowledged even by like the franchise's creators as like hyperspace is a plot device. Don't think about it too hard. It doesn't work. My favorite is how much Lucasfilm absolutely hated light speed skipping. And by Lucasfilm, I specifically mean Matt Martin from Lucasfilm. Because I asked him about it on Twitter and he was like, that shit was stupid.
Okay, I was going to say, Matt Martin can hang though. He's the guy who every year is just like, show me all your Star Wars tattoos. And I'm like, yes.
This is true. I hope he's still there. I'm not on Twitter anymore, so I don't actually, or Blue Sky, so I don't actually know.
Listen, he's in Star Wars forever because they named that annoying kid after him in Rebels.
Mart Mattin. The Star Warsist of names.
Anyway.
So that's Shay. other connections, obviously the big one, Marta choosing not to kill the leveler, taking the Gaze Electric to start her own group. Markian ends up with the Gaze Electric. He ends up seeing his, we don't actually know who it was that he went to visit to find the leveler, but it was somebody from his family who talked about their history and their hatred of the Jedi.
Oh yeah, that weird auntie who was there for 30 seconds literally.
Yes, and then he killed.
That was fun.
I do not remember that part. Which one was that in?
That was in the second adult book.
He like goes to the weird ice planet to get
the... Yeah, I remember the ice planet. I don't remember there being like a weird...
Yeah, the weird auntie who guided him to the correct ice block.
Yeah.
Fetch quest.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, kind of though.
Star Wars loves a good fetch quest.
Mm-hmm.
The kiddos...
Also, each of the rows has half of the controlling rod for the leveler.
Yes. And that's interesting. Of how the second one ended up back with Tromac. Because speaking of Tromac, we mentioned when we first read that book that Tromac is the name of the elder in Zine's village or planet, colony, whatever you want to call it.
We hate that guy.
That hates the Jedi and Force users. So he clearly is still somewhat brainwashed. But also he had one of the rods.
Imagine being brainwashed for 150 fucking years. Tromac, you ignorant slut.
Right?
Tromac, can I introduce you to American history?
So anyway, the kiddos, there's Tromac, there's a baby Mickeyan. Who's the other Mickeyan? Zine. So probably Zine's ancestor. And Bulin, the little Ithorian child. 10 bonus points to whoever knows where we've seen Bulin before.
Space.
I will give you 5 bonus points for that answer.
Yeah!
Star Wars? no, seriously, though, what?
He is going to feature very heavily in Phase 3, but we got a picture of him in the Markian Row kind of comic.
What do we say about comics?
The 2-issue thing.
Yeah.
It's called, like, I think it's just called The Eye, that we read, where Markian Row goes into a prison where a mad scientist Ithorian is being held for conducting unholy experiments on people, and is like, are you Bulin?
Oh.
Do you want to join me?
Burp's face right now is like, what the actual fuck are you talking about?
You don't even fucking know, Burp. Bulin, that's a bad guy. That's a bad guy. We probably should have let him drown, is all I'm saying.
I mean, oh, Christ on
we
a cracker.
We probably should have gone back in time and killed baby Hitler on that one.
I was going to say, are we killing baby Hitler once?
The way that Markian loves an evil scientist is, it's a fucking, like, personality.
I do respect that hustle. Mm. Like.
I don't believe he fucks Bulin, for whatever that's worth. I guess Gira Scientist isn't a scientist, or Gira Staris isn't a scientist.
What?
More of a politician.
I'm thinking about the fucking, the guy who's keeping Mari Santeco alive for so long is what I'm thinking
too.
Of, but okay.
The little Shatra fan?
Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway, other things. Aslan, that dude's cray.
Oh. This poor man, oh my god. They're like, we're gonna ship him off to a sanatorium on a random fucking planet. And I was like, when has that literally helped anybody? Tuberculosis, bad dog induced psychosis. It's all bad. Nothing cures that. Like, sanatorium sure don't.
This is not a Bulin like instance of you've seen his name before, but you do know him, and in this week's reading you will find out how.
Oh, yeah, I read a spoiler for that. I'm excited.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Okay, so you know.
I had a question at the end of phase one, and it was answered. Anyway, go on.
Yes.
I wish I could remember what your question was, because then I would be like, oh, cool.
I'll let you know.
I will say, the thing about Aslan is I'm obsessed with, like, him. First of all, that sanitarium is going to be haunted later. Because I'm pretty sure how they all work.
Yes, correct.
But I'm obsessed with, like, him getting eaten by the bad dog turning into Ring Around the Rosie.
It's, I know, and that is, that is the comparison. Because every time you're like, why the fuck would they make this a children's rhyme? I can point you to the Black Death.
Pocket full of posies, man.
Ashes, ashes, we all fall down.
I mean, literally, yes. We turn into husks and die.
Literally, what the fuck is wrong with people?
I just, like, I want a full extra book. Or, I don't want a book. I want an oral history. Of
who decided to make Shriek Hooray into a song.
Oh my god,
Aslan, what's his fuck? To Shriek Hooray, into children's things hundreds of years into the future.
I wish now I wish Star Wars would do a thing in the form of like a World War Z situation, but they won't because they suck. Anyway.
God, that would be so interesting.
Won't that be dope as fuck?
Who is making fun of this broken ass man to the point where it's like, oh ho ho ho, shriek ray.
I
like sing song it.
I hate it.
Like, or he's going crazy near somebody who's like, oh, I should tell this to my children.
It was actually my headcanon, which I literally am coming up with on the spot, is when he was healing in the Jedi Temple, and before they transferred him to the sanitarium, one of the healers at the Jedi Temple heard him doing that fucking rhyme over and over again, and was like, hey, that rhymes, and it just got stuck in her head, and she ended up being the, like, crazy woman who took care of the kids in creche for 100 years, and that's how Stellan and all of them heard it.
Oh, I buy that.
Yeah. That feels super reasonable.
And she doesn't even, like, remember that it has anything to do with anything.
I mean, you have this note in here about why didn't we ask Arkoff, like, Master Arkoff about any of this fucking shit? And I'm like he fucking remembers.
Oh my god, the fucking operational secrecy continues to fuck over the Jedi.
I'm sorry, is it operational secrecy or everybody is holding the stupid ball?
This entire universe could have been an email. Maybe if you'd been like, hey, so, weird thing.
Only if all the comms relays work in the outer room, though.
No, and that's actually, and I think we talked about that in
phase one.
And in phase two, that's actually something that I really enjoy about the High Republic, is that we don't have the way to communicate with everybody at all times like we do in the Skywalker Saga era. But like, yeah, like it's like, hey, so weird thing. What's his name? The Twi'lek? Who dies?
Which one?
Bell's master.
Oh, yeah. Oh, fucking
Great Storm. Loden. Yes. Loden Great Storm.
Yes. Yeah.
I was like, what's the Twi'lek's name? And any of them. What? Yeah, go
There's
on.
So many fucking Twi'leks.
It's like, I have a list. You're gonna need to be more specific.
It's true.
And if you include half Twi'leks, it starts with Broccoli Boy. Who is human with green hair. Sorry.
Leave him alone.
Anyway.
My precious child.
But yeah, like, hey, so weird thing. Loden Great Storm turned to ash. Has anybody ever seen anything like this before?
Meanwhile, Master Arkoff out here with a thumb up his ass. Like,
like, hey, if you send an email to Arkoff over on Banshee, maybe he'll be like, hey, this is a thing that's happened before. And it was like real bad. We should probably talk about it.
They did ask him, and Waifu deleted the email.
Oh, you're so right. No.
Waifu was like, that's
no.
Spam.
Yoda set up a spam filter.
I'm stunned that stupid ass Yoda did not show up for me to berate him some more in my mind.
Like, Yoda set up a spam filter on the Jedi server that is like, anybody mentions dust or husking, those get sent straight to garbage.
No,
that's
this
why
is just
nobody's
one of those
cleaned
things...
the Jedi temple in years.
It's one of those things where, like, my company sends us phishing tests all the fucking time. Mm-hmm. And every once in a while, they send a real email, mm-hmm, and nobody opens it.
No, literally, mm-hmm, all my entire fucking, like, team at work in our Slack channel being like, did anyone else get this email? Is it real? Can I click on it?
All the time. One time, our CEO sent an email with, like, a link to our intranet to announce that, like, a senior leader was leaving. But we were like, why can't you just say, like, no, we're not clicking on this.
That's
like,
horrific.
It's really funny because, so we have a relatively new guy at work who I work with. And a couple months ago, like when he first started, he was like, hey, like, just like gut checking, like our CEO wouldn't like email me personally to like ask me to call his cell, right? And in my mind, I'm like, actually, he would. But no, this is phishing. But he would do that because he's a guy for sure.
Yeah. No, this thing happened like not too long after some people were like also getting, I don't know if it was like phishing or like real, but people were getting texts that were like from the CEO.
Oh, yeah.
And mm-hmm, I was like, girl, this is not the way to do it. Like,
you want to fire me because I didn't buy you your Apple gift cards, you can fire me. That's fine. I'll draw that line in the sand. You didn't buy me your fucking Coruscant shopping mall gift cards.
Anyway, have so many questions about them being like, no, we don't need to file this information away for later, even though we don't know what happened to the bad dog.
I mean, and it does. Kate's,
to be fair, it goes away for a long time.
Kate's pointing at time for me. It does go back to Yoda, though, because
he's a green piece of shit.
There's a small number of Jedi who were there and who were on Dalna and know what happened, at least to some extent. And Yoda is one of them. And he decided to just, it was more important for him to just fuck off and find some weird mummy dude than it was to actually help the Order fight.
Furthermore, fucking Yaddle was there. Yaddle, I expect better from you, bitch.
I do expect better from Yaddle. That's on Yaddle, for sure.
Unbelievable.
Why would Bryce Dallas Howard do us like this?
Oh my god.
We can't record it because otherwise people will know we have a weakness. Still, like, gets me.
Oh my god, that
put
was
it in the
fucking
restricted section.
Absolutely fucking bananas. I just, it's fine. It's cool. You know, Asli even wrote it down and they were like, we're going to bury this under a whole ass fucking Jedi temple. Okay, sure.
I mean, it's one of those things that makes absolutely no sense plot-wise and yet makes perfect sense plot-wise because this is kind of who they end up being.
It is deeply on brand.
Anyway, because Kate is continuing to tap her watch at me.
I didn't even do anything.
I was like, wait, all right, spicy.
Now that we're done with phase two, this is something I've like mentioned, like, oh, I want to talk about this at the end of phase two and at the end of phase three. We're not there yet.
We're not.
How did we feel about how the storytelling was done? And specifically, do you think it is possible if you're your average reader who is picking up books at, you see it on the table at Barnes and Noble and you're like, Star Wars, this seems fun. And that's, and like you say, you see the first, you're reading the adult books because you're like, Star Wars, the adult ones, they're all the same size. It's the sequel to XYZ. It has it in the front cover. Is it possible to follow the plot?
If you're just reading the adult books, no. If you are reading the adult books plus the YA books, you could cobble together some general sense of it. I know that the Battle of Jedha mainly was told through an audio drama, and it's like, there's important shit going on in there, but like, if you skipped over it, like, you know, if you got the story of the Rose and you got the general story of the bad dogs, like, I think you would survive. You'd be missing some fucking details for sure.
Yeah, you'd be missing details, but like, I feel like the Battle of Jedha, like, it's not the main, it is like, it is an important part of like this whole situation between the path and the mother and the Jedi. But one for me, like having read the comics and all listened to the audiobook and like done all of that, I feel like every time like Jedha comes up like back up in one of the books, I'm like, this motherfucker again. Like, it's just like, I almost feel like reading all of it, it's oversaturated.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I don't even care for that part of the story. Like, I don't give a shit about what happens on Jedha.
Me too. I like, so I feel like, you know, I remember last time when we were talking about the fall of Starlight Beacon, I was saying like, this is one of those like nexus points where like we're supposed to feel that big payoff of like, here are all these characters coming together. It's fucking Avengers Endgame, whatever the hell. And like, definitely the Battle of Jedha and the Battle of Dalna are supposed to be those moments. And I'm just like, at a certain point, they're reading, because we've read everything, there is so much repetition. I'm like, this is a slog.
Yeah.
I completely agree with that point. Like, I found myself skipping through parts of the Battle of Jedha because I found it really boring, and then I would like, I learned more about the Battle of Jedha from like later in the books when they were recapping it than I actually did during the battle.
Yeah.
And this is once again a personal problem for me, but like, I have a problem with audio dramas, like, just in that.
I don't think that's a personal problem, no. Though, like, that's not uncommon.
I mean, well, no, but it's for me personally, like, it's a not a comprehension thing, but like a comprehension thing.
Yeah, sure. No, I hear what you're saying. Like, not like Yeah. I hear what you're saying.
No, it's,
I
mean, it's not going to stick with me.
Yeah.
In an audio drama, if like it would if it were like written on the page.
No, I and
like, and I know I can read it, but like I was trying to be true to.
But also, like,
the medium, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is that a you problem? If, like, because, like, I don't think that's unique to you at all. Like, I think there's a sizable segment of the world that is like that. And I think we have evidence of that by the fact that they then publish the scripts of these audio dramas afterward because they know that that's a way to reach more people, which is great. And it's inclusive. And it's, you know, you want to make sure your story is reaching as many people as possible. But then it begs the question, like, should you put major plot points in something that inherently, even putting aside the comic aspect of like a lot of people don't even know where to like get comics because comics are, no offense, Devin, comics can be very hard to follow, like the publishing schedule of, like, and like unless you have a good local comic store with a guy that's willing to explain it to you, like it's very hard to figure it out. Like, you're locking an entire segment of readership or of listenership of whatever you want to call it out of having the full story.
I feel like, I think that's a good point because famously every time we read the comics of this, I'm like, fuck, we got to do this again. I also famously love like world building, and I think including comics like as part of the phases would be a great area for that, which we do see sometimes. We do get these fun extra stories and like character backgrounds that maybe it's not like something imperative that we need to know. It's not like a plot driver, but it's like great additional content. If you're putting like a whole battle and like all this shit about like, wait, who is this character? Like, what is this again? And like assuming that we already know it, like I think like the main plot should be in the books,
mm-hmm.
and everything else should be if you want it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have issues with like splitting it between the adult and the YA. I think that's fine because it's still the same medium, and it's not difficult for like me, an adult, to go read a YA book. Like that's just another book. I can go find the book and go, okay, let me read this now.
I'm really curious. I'm gonna say one sentence, Kate, and then you, because I see you wanting to say something. I would love to for somebody to like interview like the story architects, like the ones at Lucasfilm, the authors themselves, the folks at, you know, the different publishing houses, whatever. In like, you know, 3 to 5 years, once we're fully past all this, because, you know, the whole thing only ended like last year.
Do I want to bully poor Tom back on the podcast?
I would. Listen, if we ever like start to get listenership back up and like can justify that, I would love to.
I say this with like love, affection, and admiration. Tom works real hard, but
yes, absolutely. Yeah. No, we love Tom. We also love the team at Delray.
Nicest man. Yeah.
But like, it's very evident as somebody who like lived through this era of media where like everything needed to become a cinematic universe.
Like it's COVID.
Well, no, but like,
I mean, I don't disagree with this point.
All of this was created in like the middle of like peak Marvel Infinity Saga, like Infinity War, Endgame. It is required viewing for you to see every single Marvel movie, and you're going to do it because that's what the pop culture zeitgeist is. And we've kind of passed that now, and that's why the MCU is kind of like having a weird moment, and Star Wars is having a weird moment because Star Wars tried to buy into that, but also didn't really do it as well, and so never was really fully able to take advantage. And I would love to know, like, you know, down the line, how they feel about that decision. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Kate, you go. You had something.
I like, so, as a person who's like trying to do writing on this pod, so like as a person who makes things, I really love the idea of an internet connected universe and using all these different media, and because like that's fun, because like for me as a creator, I'm like, oh yes, I would love to dabble in trying to write this and that and the all the other things. And then also as So Chris and I have been like trying to at least catch up on, speaking of Marvel, on the movies, if not all of the Disney Plus shit. As a consumer, exhausting. And the older I get, the more exhausting it fucking gets, because I am so tired all the time.
I don't even have kids, bro.
And I'm like, I'm exhausted. Who has the time to put their eyeballs on all the shit? Yeah.
And I never, like, tried to, like, get into it super hard. But at one point, like, early in Marvel, I was like, oh, maybe I'll, like, watch, like, I'll try to get into it. And I missed a couple. And there were so many coming out that I'm like, no, this isn't fucking worth it. Like, I'm sorry. there's so much. It's, like, so overwhelming that, like.
Mm-hmm.
It's the oversaturation. It's just the volume of it, which I like. Like, I think it's good that there's a lot of stuff out there for us to enjoy. But if it's all interconnected and if you miss something, like, you're fucked, it gets harder.
Sure, yeah. If it was, like, a pick and choose, like, I don't know, Star Trek is more episodic and serialized.
Star Trek is much more serialized historically. It's really funny that you bring up Star Trek, because there actually is quite a backlash to, like, the whole interconnected universe aspect. I mean, and a lot of it is because, like...
Of the new stuff, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
But, like, also a lot of it is because, like, fucking Discovery starred Sonequa Martin-Green, who is a black woman. Like, so, like, that can't be taken out of it.
Episodic means self-contained, serialized is...
You're right, sorry. Continuing. Episodic.
I literally just fucking... I'm the drunk one.
Yeah, but you're also an English major. I don't have this in my drunk brain. It's like how if somebody wants to talk politics, I'm more likely to do it when I'm drunk because I was a poli sci major, whereas when I'm sober, I'm like, I really don't care what you think. But yeah, that is like kind of a discussion. And I'm not deep into the Trek fandom, so like I'm not gonna pretend to be, but it is something that is like often discussed about like what is kind of the heart of Trek. I think it was an interesting conversation that was happening as Star Wars was doing all this and as Marvel was really doing all this, and we talk about like the frequency of putting everything out. Like, I think it's really fair to say that both Star Wars and Marvel absolutely shot themselves in the foot by needing to have something new for every investor meeting and needing to have something new out every single quarter.
Oh man. Dude, if we bring capitalism into this, that's a whole another 3-hour fucking conversation. Don't even get me started.
We do not have time for another 3-hour conversation.
This is true. We're already over an hour, which is Kate's I lose interest mark.
I will play you out.
I'm hungry.
But yeah, like that. I mean, honestly, we can probably leave it there, but like, I do think that that is.
I'm hungry, and so are the bad dogs.
The last thing I'll say, and then. You two get a last word in as well. For me, I like a connected universe. I like feeling like I have earned a reveal or earned an understanding that is not obvious at first. But for me, it's very tricky to do right because it has to be additive without taking anything away. And I think...
And the payoff didn't pay off here.
Exactly. We talked about that.
Yeah, and I think... To its credit, I'll like use the MCU and like Infinity War and Endgame. I think they had a run where they actually did that extremely well, where you didn't need to see every movie, but if you did, you would catch shit that was really fun.
Yep.
And now we're not there anymore.
Yep.
But I feel like here it wasn't additive, and it was very much a requirement that if you wanted the full story, you needed to, like, I don't know how you would know what to read without going on Wikipedia.
Which, God bless us, everyone.
And, like, that to me is a failure.
The only thing I have to add is, like, Star Wars fans, Star Trek fans shaking hands over, we hate J.J. Abrams.
God, that's so true.
The end. That's all I got.
I never understood why Star Trek fans hated the J.J. Abrams Star Trek movies until Rise of Skywalker came out.
Oh my God.
Anyway, yes, please play us out. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Book Wars Pod.
I want you to know that Gracie Abrams still has Star Wars fans in her Instagram comments being like, your dad ruined Star Wars.
Okay, that's it. That's fucking insane.
Oh, no, 100%. And also, it's kind of funny. Sorry.
It is. It's, that's... Listen, it's very fun to make fun of Nepo babies, but don't saddle them with the sins of their bad writing.
Oh, no, there's plenty of shit to dunk on Gracie Abrams for. That's not one of them.
I was going to say, I'm sure, I don't know Gracie Abrams' music, but I'm sure she's a bad writer in her own way. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Book Wars Pod. Next week, we're going to be kind of continuing this interstitial bit between the two phases with Tales of Light and Life, which is a book of short stories that came out between phases 2 and 3. It picks up a lot of threads from phase 1. It has a couple threads from phase 2. So yeah, read that, and then we're also going to be reading the Marvel miniseries, The High Republic Shadows of Starlight. Again, just a lot of connecting threads in that one, getting us ready for the big mainline phase 3 push. After that, since I know Burb likes to have these in advance so she can reserve it from the library, we're going to be reading The Eye of Darkness.
And other people should also.
And other people should also. I just assume nobody reads along with us. I barely read along with us, let's be honest. We're going to be reading The Eye of Darkness by George Mann, which is the first adult novel of Phase 3. In the meantime, if you have the means and are so inclined, please donate first and foremost to immigrantjustice.org. Then, if you want to light your money on fire, you can always give us Patreon or Ko-fi money. It really helps us cover our hosting and production costs. And we'll stream again, I promise. The more people sign up for the $2 tier of Patreon, the more we're going to actually have to stream. So
it's true. Also, autism can't stop trying to 100% Hades, so it's fine.
But you could no stream that.
Yeah, but no one cares.
You could stream
so
repeated
boring.
Runs of you using the exact same weapon in the exact same boons. Everyone would love it. Thank you so much for listening. Our theme song is Whiz Bang by Poddington Bear. Our logo and artwork are by Joby Terra Design. Our audio and production are by very soon to be Dr. Producer Devin Keys. From all of us, Kate, Devin, Miranda, Rana, Argos, Blue, Flix, Magenta, Merly, Orca, and Tony, I'm Chris. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
But I mean,
no, I.